So patience, when I was growing up, I was always told patience is a virtue. I think the hint was be patient, you know, just a reminder. So patience is actually the most powerful of all the virtues. It engenders a feeling of calm in our mind, a feeling of ease, of having an undisturbed mind with great compassion. It's a very powerful state of mind. So it's the antidote to anger, because being impatient is on the spectrum, isn't it? It's slight irritation through to full-on rage, which is the opposite of patience. So in practicing patience, we're abandoning anger when problems come, because don't problems come all the time? I used to fly a lot to America. I still fly sometimes to America. And anyway, before, when I was doing that, I used to always pick up one of these little books, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And the next book is, and it's all small stuff. So everything that irritates us and causes us problems, we've got to put a bigger perspective. So through patience, we're able to keep a peaceful state of mind towards people, situations that displease us, or people who hurt us, harm us. And the idea of never giving up on ourselves, but also never giving up on them. So it's not about suppressing anger, trying to just bottle it, you know, clamp it down, because that just comes out in other ways. But the ability to just remain at ease, remain calm in a situation, and then you know precisely how to deal with it. So then patience is a strength, it's not a weakness, it's not being submissive, it's not being a doormat, as we say. The Dalai Lama said that many people think that to be patient is a sign of weakness. And he said, I think that's a mistake. It is anger that is a sign of weakness. So totally the opposite. So patience comes with having a stability of mind, having strength in our wisdom and our compassion, of knowing what to do in a situation and being able to do that with courage. So with courage, with patience, we live longer, because we're not controlled by anxiety. So have I sold you yet on patience? It's sort of a bit out of what is conventionally accepted in the world. You know, we accept that, we talk about justified anger, don't we? We talk about situations, you're right to get angry, or you're right to get irritated, or so forth. You've got to do something about it. Well, do something about it, yes, but who does the anger or the irritation harm first? It's ourselves, isn't it? Yes, if it comes out in our speech and action, it'll then harm someone else, but first ourselves. So patience, the perfection, the paramita of patience, kshanti, comes between the perfection of ethics, of moral discipline, in other words, watching our speech and our actions when we engage with others, taking responsibility for that. As the Buddha said, do no harm. Easy to say, harder to refrain from doing, isn't it? So it comes between that and the one of joyous effort or enthusiasm, perseverance, enthusiastic perseverance in our practice. So it's about both when we engage with others, but also when we, you know, practice meditation, our Dharma practice or study or so forth. So it works, you know, on our external engagement, but also our internal processes, both sides. So generally it's talked about three different types of patience. So the patience when we're harmed by others, as we've just sort of reflected on a bit in that meditation slightly. Patience when we're suffering, because if I look at animals who are suffering, particularly if they're, you know, sick or so forth, they don't know it's going to end. They're just miserable. You know, want to be rid of it immediately. And then enduring hardship. And persevering in our practice, patience with cultivating our meditation practice, our concentration, and learning the Dharma. So the first thing is, in relation to others, is to not want to retaliate back when others harm us. You know, we shouldn't react by getting angry or... It said, if a person... one of the examples, if a person stabs us with a knife, then it had to happen to us. What does that mean? I said, stab me? No. But if we understand a bit about karma, we understand that there were causes and conditions previously, in a previous lifetime, where we have created the situation to be in that situation where we might get stabbed. We've put our, in another sense you could say, we've put our body in that place. Of course, you want to get out of the way if you can. I mean, you don't stand there and say, stab me, do you? Skillful means we do what we can. But if someone causes us harm, also we've got to have compassion for them. Because what caused that person to cause that harm? They must have a very disturbed mind. They must be very angry themselves, or, you know, whatever is going on in their mind. They might be just mentally disturbed. So we want to have compassion for someone in that situation. So Lungri Tangpa was a great scholar in Tibet, Geshe Lungri Tangpa. And he wrote 8 verses of thought transformation. In other words, how do we work with our mind to even have those ideas come spontaneously? Because what comes spontaneously, naturally? The irritation, doesn't it? The frustration, the aversion. These things come easily. Why? Because the Buddha would say, well, you've practiced it for many lifetimes, so you got very good at it. So practicing in the face of harm, actually having compassion to the one giving you harm, it's not easy. We might even think, I don't want to do that, you know. So Lungri Tangpa even said, you know, for somebody that I've showered with kindness and I had great hopes in them and so forth, and if they turn around and do harm to me, give the victory. This is the way he spoke, you know, give the victory to others, to them. So one example of that, I think, is like, you know, parents, you know, they raise the children and give them everything, and then I'm sure all of you are impeccable sons and daughters. But I know from my childhood, when I became a teenager and I started getting very negative, just my poor parents, I mean, I didn't, you know, beat them up or anything like that, but my speech, very negative, very critical and so forth. And here my poor parents, they'd raised me up, you know, since birth. I wouldn't be alive today without them, would I? You know, caring for me, nurturing and so forth, and all the way along the way, you know, on and on and on and on. Even, you know, my mother died last year, so both my parents are dead now, right up to the end, still caring as the mother, you know. So, and then the kids come along and, I don't like this, I don't like that, you know, why don't you do this, why don't you do that? So, you know, that parent doesn't give up. That parent loves the child. So this is the sort of thing we need to cultivate towards those who might do harm to us or present difficulties, because patience is the best teacher in a way, you know, that we can't, if everyone's agreeing with us all the time, we can't develop patience. It's only the people who, Tenzin Palmer says, who are like our sandpaper. They rub us up the wrong way. People who rub us up the wrong way. But in the process, we get smooth. I quite like that. I mean, I don't like the idea of being rubbed up by sandpaper. But, you know, they knock off our hard edges. If we're willing to put it into practice, if we're willing to take it on board and do something with that. So this patience takes courage in the face of adversity, in the face of hardship, in the face of difficulty, particularly to this one, the one who harms us. So when we're suffering, when something goes wrong, we usually point to the outside, that person or that situation. It's their fault, isn't it? Some, you know, the blame's outside.
And it is true.
It may well. I mean, if someone stabs you, it's going to hurt. Believe me, they'll be arrested. So, conventionally, we accept that, don't we? But, you know, there's deep down our own underlying karma, our own cause. And so if we don't purify, eliminate that negative karma from the past, it's going to come back and get us. And not only that, over time it expands. So it might have been just some slight little incident that ends in the stabbing or whatever happens. So like that. And even, you know, if, like in Tibet, the Tibetans, you know, well, Dalai Lama and many of the lamas and many other Tibetans had to leave the country, you know. There they were, practicing in an isolated place and up until the 1950s, pretty isolated, you know, in the Dharma practice and so forth. And situation changed, they had to leave. But they said, why get angry with the Chinese? It's our karma. We created the situation. They don't get angry. They say, yeah, we created the... I mean, you take action, but why get angry? It only disturbs you. So if we think like this, it at least reduces the amount of suffering that we have, you know. We start to practice patience with small things, niggling little things. So slight irritations, we recognize slight irritations before it gets full-blown, you know. So, for example, some years ago I worked with a schools program, Cooling Conflicts, and it was about anger management. And the kids, it was peer training. So we trained year 11, they trained year 9, they trained year 7, and so forth, year 5, year 3. To notice, first of all, when the irritation arises, when you can do something with it before it gets into a punch and a kick and, you know, a playground brawl in that situation. So this is the thing. We start being patient with ourselves. The irritations are going to come. The frustrations are going to come. The anger is going to come unchecked. But we be patient and think, well, I'm working on myself. You know, I'm doing what I can. If I first notice, that's already a step forward. Look at the world. You know, most people, a world war breaks out before they notice they're angry, isn't it? They're suddenly fighting and they don't know why. So we start with little ones, you know, the disturbing emotions. What is it that, you know, the anxieties, the fears, the anger, the irritations and so forth. And then, you know, the great beings, the great bodhisattvas and Buddhas and so forth have practiced the perfection of patience. So if you look at Shakyamuni Buddha, how long did he practice? 3 countless great eons. How long's a great eon? Anyone know? So as long as it would take, if every 100 years your cloak brushed the side of the mountain, as long as it takes for that mountain to erode is a great eon. So 3 countless ones of them. So an awfully, awfully long time. Never giving up. That's patience, isn't it? That's patience. Put it in perspective. So, you know, we hear stories of the Buddha not harming, you know, actually even giving his body to other beings. You know, lying down, he saw the tigress about to eat her cub in a previous life when he was a prince, and saw the tigress about to eat the cubs and lay down. Don't practice this at home. Slit his throat. Gave himself to her so that she didn't eat her tiger cubs. So she didn't create the negative karma. Amazing. Anyway, many stories like that. They're to inspire us, but, you know, they're not to be, you know, practiced unless you've got control over your body to such an extent it doesn't matter. So this type of patience, for example, in Tibet, the Buddhism went right down. So Buddhism was introduced into Tibet in about the 8th century, Padmasambhava, Guru Rinpoche. And then it had gone down in around the 11th century because there was a king who suppressed Dharma practice. I mean, we can see today in the world, you know, different examples of this. And so then a king in Western Tibet, Lama Yeshe Er, and he wanted to build up the Dharma again. And another king put him in prison. And so he said, go to India, give the money to... He had to get out of prison, he had to give his weight in gold. And his nephew went around collecting the money, the gold. I mean, your weight in gold these days, gold's very expensive, isn't it? That'd be a lot of money. Anyway, he said, no, don't give it to me. You go to India and you give it to the greatest scholar who can come and re-establish the Dharma here in Tibet. And so he refused to leave the prison. He said that, you know, he'd spend his life, was almost over, and he might as well just stay in prison because he'd rather see Tibet benefit from the Dharma. So they invited Lama Atisha from Nalanda University. Nalanda University in Bihar State in India, where a lot of the great Indian scholars were. And they invited him to go. And anyway, so Atisha had gone to Indonesia. His teacher, Selingpa, was in Indonesia, in Jambi, Muro Jambi, up in, what's the island up north? I think it's Mustang. It's not Mustang. Anyway, the Northern Island. No, above. Next one up. Anyway, the next island up from Sumatra. And he, anyway, so he went there, and he, it was just like Nalanda University. It was from the 8th century. They had very strong university Dharma practice and so forth throughout that whole area. And so he went there and studied 12 years to get teachings on compassion. 12 years. Took him 11 months to get there by boat, and then went back. And so then he went to Tibet to rise up the teachings again. And Atisha, when he was going to Tibet, he had another scholar with him who he kept close to him that nobody could stand because he was just obnoxious. And everyone said to him, why do you keep him close? Why do you keep him around you? He said, because he teaches me patience. So he had him there to teach him patience. That was the whole point. And he said, if you hate, how can you possibly practice patience? You can't do it. So apparently by the time he got to Tibet, he let go of that scholar. It was like, job done. And they say that was because there was enough people in Tibet to irritate him. He didn't need to bring someone from India once he got to Tibet. who knows? Okay. All right. So the king that invited Atisha, not only did he stay in prison, but he took no revenge against his the king who'd locked him up. And the thought of seeking revenge only increases our own suffering, only increases our own pain, and it gives, you know, and therefore we create more negative karma just by having the thought of revenge. So it's said, that Buddha used the example that if someone beats us with a stick, the immediate cause of pain is what? What caused you the pain? The stick. So why get angry with the person? So getting angry with a person is worse than getting angry with a stick. I mean, getting angry is bad enough, but with a person, worse. But the person wielding the stick is reacting against us, you know, and so, which may be, you know, we've been in the grip ourselves of some mental disturbance. So we have to look at ourselves, we have to look at our own minds and see, okay, what can I change? Because really I have very little impact on the situation around me. In being able to change the situation around, whether the person... There will always be people, as Atisha said when he got to Tibet, there were always going to be people that will irritate you, that cause harm, cause difficulties. No problem finding them, okay? So we can't control all of them. What we can control over is our mind. You know, Shantideva in Bodhisattva's Way of Life said, you can't just... You know, if there's thorns on the path, on the road, you can't just cover the whole earth with leather so that you don't have thorns. You cover your feet. So you look to yourself. You look to your own mind. You protect your own mind. So that idea. So There was a woman in America, in the States, which is America, right? People in South America don't like just referring to the United States as America. You want to irritate anyone from South America? No, I knew that. I say we are all Americans, down south and up north. Anyway, from the United States, this woman was put in prison for murder. Anyway, she was wrongly accused. She didn't do the murder, but she was put in prison. She was there for 17 and a half years. When she went into prison, I mean, she didn't know how long she was going to be there because she knew she was innocent. But she decided, this is not a prison cell, this is a meditation room. She did long retreat, 17 and a half years. So she was very patient. Of course, she took or had her lawyers take whatever action they could to get her out, and eventually they did. You know, eventually she won an appeal, but it took an awfully long time. When she left, she had no anger in her mind. She had no thought of revenge or anything like that because she'd worked with her mind. So we can all do that. I mean, you could say that could be what we call justified anger, isn't it? You could be angry and bitter for 17 and a half years, but what are you going to do? You get cancer as a result, or you know, stress and anxiety and so forth. No point. So any sort of aggression, if we think about it, any sort of conflict only just increases more problems, more conflict. I mean, we know there's no war in the world that has achieved peace, is there? Otherwise, we'd have world peace a few times over. There's none that has done that. And yet, if everyone in the world practiced patience, there would be real peace in the world, if all of us were patient. I like to think of patience as the new slow movement. You know, we've got slow cooking, slow this, slow that. Patience. Slow. So, but, you know, people who have no experience of the Dharma, here I am, you know, you're all interested in the Dharma, you have some experience of it, you've got some experience of meditation, you want to know about practicing patience and so forth. But people who don't have that, it's just an automatic reaction to want to seek revenge, to want to fight back and so forth. And yet we find in all religions it says, you know, what did Jesus say? Turn the other cheek if somebody's hitting you. And in the Tibetan tradition, Lama Tsongkhapa, who started the Gelugpa tradition, which you heard from the introduction, I'm part of that tradition, he said, when I remember, see or hear living beings speaking harshly or hitting me, may I meditate on patience and avoiding anger, speak instead of their good qualities. Whoa, when somebody's harming me. Maybe not if they're in a rage, because I think in a rage, not only do they not hear criticism, I also don't think they hear kind words as well. You've got to wait till they calm down. And then, you know, praise them, talk about their good qualities.
Okay.
Yes.
The Bible also says eye for an eye, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
I think it does say eye for an eye too. Yeah.
So it depends which part of the Bible.
It's true, yeah. It's true. Yeah, it does say eye for an eye. Yeah, eye for an eye, tooth for the tooth. It'd be nice if it was somebody being a donor, but it's not about being a donor. I'm reframing the Bible here. So Lama Tsongkhapa said, patience is the foremost adornment. My own teacher, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, said, you know, you wear it like an earring, although as an ordained person, I don't wear earrings. It's the best shield against the weapon of harsh speech. And so really take on the supreme armour of patience. So it's like a protection for our mind, so that we, even difficult things happen, we're not disturbed. So again, you know, like the Tibetans, particularly like the Dalai Lama, you know, as, you know, sort of through meditation, through cultivating patience and so forth, not getting angry. His first impulse is love. Naturally. He doesn't have to say, oh, I know I've got to love this person and not get angry. Just naturally, because of practicing that. So the more we practice, the better we get good at it. At anything, isn't it? So we can think about the armour of patience, you know, putting on the armour like a protective suit. And it can't be pierced by anger. And it only ever increases your virtuous qualities, which is why it is so important. So through perfecting patience, we can become just like Shakyamuni Buddha. We can become. So it's not about just avoiding conflict or situations or saying nice things and being friendly to everyone. If we do this and don't practice patience, it's impossible. We can't behave like that to everybody we encounter. But if we cultivate the mind, you know, of patience and think, I'll be patient, which includes towards ourselves, then we're more able to deal with difficulties when they arise with equanimity. There's a nice quote out there about patience giving rise to equanimity, which is a stable, it's a two-way street, because equanimity gives rise to patience and patience gives rise to equanimity. So equanimity, having a calm, subdued mind, and then engaging in that in our relations with people from that state of calm. And then, you know, also as we, in our own Dharma practice, in our own meditation, you know, we want to develop single-pointed concentration. We want to have a really focused mind. We don't want our mind to go off out the window and go on to other stories and so forth. So what do? We relax. We don't get frustrated with ourselves. We don't get irritated with ourselves. We be very patient and gentle and kind and take delight in what we are achieving, because that, you know, encourages us to do more and more. If you're just going to sit there and criticise yourself, well, you're not meditating, is it? You know, so, and it constricts our mind. We're, you know, having the virtues, having the patience, having the, you know, sort of compassion towards our souls, opens our minds, makes us very spacious, makes everything possible. It's much more powerful energy, positive energy for our mind. So my teacher, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, his name, Zopa, means patience. So every time I think of him, I think of patience. And I think of all our lamas, all our teachers, and think, they've been patient like Shakyamuni Buddha for eons. They don't mind giving you the same advice again and again and again. They don't mind giving you the same teaching again and again and again and again. They don't say, I told you this already 20 times. 100 times. No, they just very joyously and happily give it again and again and again. That's patience. That's practicing patience with us. As we take our little baby steps, you know, along the path and go, oh, well, you know, I'm not really practicing very well, and, you know, I'm not doing this and I'm not doing that. We beat ourselves up. They have joy in what we do. So we can transform it like that. So practicing patience means having a tranquil mind. In Shantideva, who wrote the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, he's another one of the Nalanda masters who... Shantideva... Nalanda University was from about the 7th century, maybe 11th or 12th century in India. You know, big place of Buddhist scholarship. And to get into the university, you'd have to pass a test just to get through the gatekeeper. Imagine you came to the gate here and the parking person gave you a test. I'm going to let you in. Well, we don't have parking people here anymore. So I'm going to give you an exam just to get in. Anyway, so he obviously got in. He had the smarts. But then people thought he was a waste of space. He never seemed to do anything except just eat and sleep and go to the toilet. And so they thought, we'll put you to the test. And they sat him up on the teacher's throne, and he gave this most eloquent teaching in four-line verse, quite on all the perfections and everything. And we study that to this day. So anyway, so he said, bothersome sentient beings are as infinite as the sky, but once the angry mind has been destroyed, all enemies are destroyed. So if we work on our own mind, get rid of anger in our own mind, guess what? There's no more enemy. Because where is it coming from? From our own, maybe expectations that everyone's going to agree with, maybe expectations that, I'm going to feel good all the time. Where does that expectation come from? Because that's not what the Buddha taught, is it? Buddha said what? You know, suffering, dissatisfaction. This is the nature of existence. But and yet, when we get out of our comfort zone, we don't like it. Well, guess what? Most of the time, we are out of our comfort zone. So we sort of have to get used to that, don't we? I think. Okay. So the benefits of developing patience, it gives a rise to happiness, to joy, to a sense of well-being. As I said before, reduce anxiety. It creates the causes for having a strong body and mind, and eventually liberation in the end leads to our liberation, our eternal peace, because it is a mind of peace. It is a mind of tranquility, the patient mind. And of course, also, if you look at somebody who's angry, and as the Buddha said, you know, their face gets all distorted, they get all flushed and looks pretty ugly. And so the opposite, by practicing patience, is a cause for beauty in future lives. So I look around all of you here. You've obviously practiced patience really well in past lives, because here you are, gorgeous. True. So having practiced patience is a cause for beauty. Much cheaper than Botox. Might take longer, but it's cheaper. So patience, you know, helps us feel safe, valued, supported. If there's an atmosphere of patience, it's an atmosphere of acceptance. It's an atmosphere of self-acceptance, accepting others. So we can feel comfortable to share our thoughts, to enjoy each other's company without having fear of being criticized or blamed or beaten up or anything else like that. So it's essential for our own happiness and also for the happiness of society. Imagine never getting irritated again. Can you imagine that? Imagine never getting angry at again. Imagine never being criticized. Whoa, that'll be great. Imagine never feeling your body get tense or tight, or your face getting distorted and inflamed or pumping fists. Imagine none of that ever happening. So anything that we say or that we do with a calm, peaceful manner is going to be much more effective than anything we can do in anger. I mean, just know for yourself, if you're around someone in anger, I mean, the words that come out, it's just uncontrollable, isn't it? It's just craziness if someone's in full-blown rage, and then ourselves, and then we go away afterwards and go, when we cool down and go, oh, did I really say that? Or maybe we can't even remember what we really said. So it's a bit like a two-year-old child, you know, throwing a tantrum on the floor. But the parent doesn't scold them. My mother used to say, get up off the floor. The parent doesn't stop loving them because they know that they're out of control. Their emotions are out of control. It's like an exorcist, you know, because anger's a bit like that. You sort of got a demonic mind all of a sudden. An exorcist doesn't sort of blame the person. The exorcist just tries harder to get rid of it for them, apparently. I'm not very experienced with exorcism, but, you know, that's the idea, you know, that the more difficult it is, the more they want to get rid of it. So we can say that for ourselves, you know, our own minds get demented. So the more demented our minds get, the more we want to just get rid of it, be done with it. So we need to think about the benefits of patience until we really want to practice it. The idea of not being upset, the idea of having peace of mind. So by being patient, we have fewer enemies. People sort of like us, they like to be around us. And we create good karma. We die without worry And also, we can encourage others to be patient as well in situations, particularly to stop them creating any harm and so forth. Just look at road rage, you know. If you're in a car with somebody who's quite impatient, you know, you just might want to have a quiet word with them. So to be patient requires some flexibility in our mind because, you know, anger being the opposite or irritation makes our mind very rigid, very inflexible. So we need some wisdom also to know, I'm not going to get things my way all the time. It's just, the world doesn't work like that. So why get upset? Again, as Shanti Devi said, if you can change things, change them, why worry? If you can't change them, why worry? Because you can't change them. I mean, we can accept that. We have to accept that. And also, we can think of the great harm of anger, the opposite, that even one moment of anger destroys eons of all the virtue, all the merit that we've accumulated, you know, over eons and eons, you know, making... practicing generosity, making offerings to the Buddha and to holy beings and so forth, you know, can get zapped out of existence in a moment if we get angry. So we have to practice patience before the anger arises, easier than when it does, but also when it arises as well, you know, by continuing to think about the shortcomings, you know, how it's going to affect us. So, having compassion for those who harm, having compassion and being patient. So, one of the examples again that's used by the Buddha is, you know, if I stick my hand in the fire, it's going to get burnt, it's my fault. You know, so you can't get angry with the fire. In the same way, we can't get angry with someone who attacks us because we've created the karma for it. You know, they become... and having compassion for them because they're sort of crazy with delusion. So the Dalai Lama says that the Chinese are his greatest friends. When he says the Chinese, he means the leaders of China, because actually China's the... I think there's more Buddhists in China, practicing Buddhists in China, than anywhere else in the world, I think. I do believe. Quite a lot.
About 100 million.
About 100 million. That's quite a lot.
I think Thailand's got the highest as a percentage of population.
Percentage of population,
about
yeah.
95% in Thailand. China's the highest number.
The highest number, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because there's much more freedom in Thailand to practice than there is in China. So he's talking about the Chinese officials, you know, he says their greatest friend because they give him the gift of patience so that no matter what happens, he remains at peace. So, but he's saying they give him the gift of patience because he's saying he has to work at it. It doesn't just come naturally even for the Dalai Lama or even for any of these great beings, you know. You still have to work at it, work at cultivating patience, you know, making it stronger in our mind. So in the same way, you know, if it suddenly, you know, starts, or some people do, you know, if hail starts to fall from the sky and maybe even you're driving along and it damages your car, there's no point getting angry with the sky, is there? But I guess some people might. I don't know. So the idea of not getting angry. So we can also think about it in terms of whatever... irritation we have, whatever frustrations we have, whatever happens to us, if I can't tolerate even a little bit of suffering, how on earth am I going to ever be free of that suffering? How am I ever going to, you know, sort of continue on the spiritual path and develop all these positive qualities if the slightest little thing irritates me and so forth? And if I was going to get angry, why not get, you know, the suffering of hells, which is, you know, in unbearable torment, you know, even one fire spark on the body of a hell being is greater than all the fire systems in this world. So unbearable, like, if I can't bear the sufferings I have with this human existence, imagine, you know, being in a different realm of existence. And if we are going to get angry, Where's the cause? My own mind. So if I was going to get irritated, I'd have to be with myself. But then if I get irritated with myself, I'm just going to create more disturbance. So it's catch 22. So as the Dalai Lama said, you know, peace in the world starts with peace in our own minds. And if every child in the world learnt to meditate, we could eradicate all the conflicts in the world in one generation. To bear some thinking about. So we can think about the patience of voluntarily taking on hardships, enduring hardships, because that makes us stronger. So, for example, when I got ordained, or before I got ordained, because I didn't know, you know, even up to the day, you never know if it's actually going to happen, because you might die before then, or something might happen, or anything could happen. But my motivation, my thought was, I don't care what happens to me. I don't care if I end up destitute on the street, as long as I'm ordained, you know. I don't, you know, so that thought is really very helpful, because it helps you let go of, you know, being attached to, oh, I've got to have my, you know, very comfortable bed and my very comfortable lounge chair and all my iPads and iPods and I this and I that, or whatever they are, you know, my I device. I've got to have all of those things. And particularly to, because none of those things are we going to take with us. None of those things are going to, you know, when we leave, we've got to leave the body behind. So we have this increasing sense of wanting more comforts in life, you know. Just, it seems, you know, I've seen over the years, like, mattresses seem to have become a high-tech thing these days, if you buy a new mattress, let alone a new car. You know, they get more and more comfortable, more and more user-friendly, and so forth, so that we're just, we get protected from all this external stuff. But it's a trap, because we get caught up in all of that. And so we can have that sense of not being so attached to having immediate comfort and to enduring some hardships. So, for example, a friend of mine years ago, I haven't actually seen her for a very long time, but she is chronically ill, bedridden a lot of the time. And she said it took her, from when she was diagnosed and when she, you know, started going, you know, getting more, not able to work, it took her 5 years to accept being chronically ill. So that acceptance, that patience with it, and go, I am chronically ill, means this is going to go on for quite some time. Actually, I asked somebody, any medical people here, what was the definition of chronic illness? And they said, if it lasts more than 6 months. And yet we can see we've all got this chronic illness of suffering from eons. So we need to be patient with that, with ourselves, and accept where we're at, but not just be complacent, not just stay there. So I can accept where I'm at, and now I can take some steps towards changing my situation. So, for example, you know, you're having a nice, cozy time in your bed, having a lovely dream, and you're with your friends, and you know, in a park, or, you know, sunshine, whatever, beautiful dream, and then bzzz, a mosquito comes and disturbs your sleep. What? How dare you? You know, how quick is that? We don't be patient with the mosquito. You can be patient with the mosquito. They only ever want a little bit of blood. You can just let them have it. Wish them well on their way. Say a few mantras, blow on them. But, you know, there's just such a little thing can disturb our sense of peace, isn't it? Doesn't take much, does it? Just little things happen. So we should think that we can endure such minor hardships and then, you know, endure greater hardships. Because, for example, if you were to, they say, you know, to actually do retreat, if we want to have great realizations, if we want to eventually, you know, sort of achieve Buddhahood, even to achieve liberation, to achieve peace of mind on an ongoing basis and have it stable in our mind, we need to do retreat. Now, to do retreat means to not have all those comforts of life. So we have to, you know, sort of build up that sense of, I can endure a few hardships here and there. I don't have to have espresso coffee every day. I don't have to have whatever, you know, chocolate every day. I don't know, whatever, every day to make me happy, or, you know, otherwise I, you know, have a meltdown. So it's a good practice to just, you know, see what hardships we can endure. Because if it is that being in existence at all, whether you're an animal, whether you're a human, wherever you are, is in the nature of suffering, and I want to be free of that, I'm going to have to learn to, you know, sort of endure the suffering, but also to relinquish that. So we need to remember the teachings on suffering and karma and let go of the idea that I'm perfect, I'm good, and all of that, and see how we and others suffer and have compassion. Have compassion for ourselves, having compassion for the other. Okay. So we have patience with our practice, with practicing the Dharma, with learning, if we're learning sutras or learning mantras or practicing meditation or studying the Dharma or trying to put this all into, you know, this is like the perfections, trying to put it all into practice. It's a gradual path, you know, we gradually develop the different qualities. We gradually gain realizations through meditation. It's not, you know, it doesn't just come instantly. As one of the guys in Long Bay Prison said to me, he said, he could deal with practicing patience. He said, I tried meditation once, it didn't work. I said, really? And how long did you try for? 5 minutes. Now that is not a patient person. That is someone wanting instant gratification. I want to see the results now. Why do we think we're going to close our eyes or have our eyes half open, turn our attention inwards, and it's all going to be peaceful in there when it hasn't been peaceful for ever? We're just going to see what is there. The mind is our laboratory, isn't it? It's like we're the scientists, we're looking at what's there and go, okay, there's a lot of stuff there, got to be patient with it. So we gradually chip away at, you know, the things that disturb our minds. We gradually build the positive, the strengths, with patience, with compassion. They really go hand in hand. So in our tradition, the Geshe at our centre, you know, 20 years or 25 years of training, memorising texts. You see the very young monks, and they're all memorising texts. And that takes a hell of a lot of patience. Like every night at this time, they'd be out there in the courtyard going over and over their texts, learning, and debating. So that then to be able to benefit others, then to be able to pass on that teaching and so forth to others. But even we're not going to do that, you can think, okay, whatever I do learn, I'm going to be patient with myself learning it, but apply effort, because that's the next perfection, apply the effort to do that. So for myself, I remember somebody a little bit older than me some years ago saying, you know, you want to learn all your prayers and practices off by heart because you're going to get to a point where you're blind and deaf and if you live long enough. Or you might get to that point. And I thought, she's got a good point there. So taking the time, being patient with learning. I mean, it applies to anything in life, not just the Dharma, but with our Dharma, because it's the most precious thing we can learn. And to think, if I want to have realizations, if I want to have, you know, reach this state of nirvana, eternal peace, it's going to take a hell of a long time, and I need to put in effort. I need to, you know, be patient with myself in being able to cultivate single-pointed concentration. So if you look at the 9 levels of, you know, developing single-pointed concentration, calm abiding meditation, the first 4 levels, I think, three or four levels, it says most of the time your mind is like a cascading waterfall, just an endless torrent of blah, 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 blah stuff in the mind. And your ability to focus, to concentrate, initially 1 minute, then 2, and then it increases from there. But we deal with the problems of the mind being overexcited, the mind being too dull, too unfocused, and so forth. These problems come and go, but you persist, and the problems get more and more subtle. They're not so in your face, they're not so problematic, but they're still there. And it takes long time to get to that level where you're free of all of that, a very long time. So like the guy in Long Bay, he was expecting to be at the end before he was even at the beginning, you know. It's like coming to university and expecting to have the postdoc before you've even opened a textbook or gone to a lecture or anything. It's just, it takes time. We have to study. So comes with kindness, isn't it? Being kind to yourself, being nice to yourself. So we need to continue to meditate also on compassion when we're practicing patience, to lead other beings as well to practice patience. You know, we can say our prayers to reach the highest levels of patience, but we also at the same time need to purify the disturbances of the mind, to get rid of the disturbances of the mind. And to really have faith that we're able to train our mind, to transform our mind. And that by continuing to train, we will perfect patience. We will be able to have a mind free of anger. So that when we meet suffering, we can practice patience. When someone treats us badly, we practice patience. When someone doesn't help us, so we expect they're going to help us, you know, give us a meal, give us food, give us clothing, whatever, we practice patience. If someone insults us, practice patience. If somebody bad mouths you, gets a bit more difficult, practice patience. Why? They're helping us overcome our attachment to having a good reputation, to caring others or what others think of me. Because what's that? That's ego self-grasping. So if they're going to badmouth me, be patient. They're doing you a service. So undesirable things happen to us or to our friends, to our family, we practice patience. When someone harms our friends, our family, we practice patience. When they suffer, we practice patience. We practice the patience when that person that irritates us, that person we have difficulty with, when somebody praises them. When somebody cares for them, practice patience with that. I always think it's a win-win situation. The person who irritates you, if we practice kindness and we're patient with them and compassionate with them, they have to change. Eventually. At least it doesn't disturb our mind. But also, it's very hard. Like, if you take revenge, maybe that's, or you answer back, maybe that's what they're expecting and they're used to that and it just escalates. But if you're kind, compassionate and patient, you know, taking the time over and over again, like the mother with the child, just constantly reinforcing the good behaviour and so forth and just taking the time, they have to change their position. They can't stay angry with you because there's nothing, you haven't given them any fuel. to work with. So it's like being wise in our compassion. So we also practice patience with those who give our family a bad reputation. We think about, again, having compassion for the disturbance of themselves in their own mind, why they have to beat up on other people, why they have to badmouth other people, that they're, you know, emotionally disturbed. Something's out of kilter. Okay. All right, so, you know, when our enemy, other people, you know, say, you know, fantastic things about them, say somebody's done you wrong, but other people think they're the best thing or so forth, we've got to practice patience, because our immediate thing is to think, oh, that's not fair, they're not worth having a good reputation, they're not qualified, or they're lying, or they didn't do that. So when we feel like that, that's a good time to practice patience, to tune our mind. So, for example, when someone prevents you from receiving a gift, you know, someone sends you a present, but someone else sees it and takes it, and maybe it's chocolate, they eat the chocolate, or they don't give you the money that somebody gave you, or the clothes, or whatever it is. So when someone disturbs us like that, it's again. So we can think about different situations ourselves that we can again think, this is a good time for me to be patient. So if we meditate on patience, we can stop the anger that we have towards anyone who's harming us. We can take on the suffering, we can bear the suffering, and we can think that, well, if I'm going to be alive, I'm going to suffer. Having this body, sickness, aging, death. So it begins with accepting the Four Noble Truths, and the first noble truth, the truth of suffering. So we accept that life is stressful, we accept that life is difficult. We can also accept that life is temporary. And so we can look at how much time we've been spending trying to deny it or trying to avoid suffering or dissatisfaction, and stop feeling sorry for ourselves and feeling defeated. So a lot of our reactions, whether it's to suffering, whether it's harm done by others or so forth, is a like self-protection. We're building ourselves up. We're avoiding things we don't want to deal with. We're avoiding things that we think will hurt. For example, visiting the dentist does come to mind. And we think it's unfortunate when we have pain or suffering. So this comes from an idea of my sense of a permanent self that I've got to protect. And then we have to return to the teaching about remind ourselves that if I get angry, I'm going to destroy all the virtues I've accumulated. So Shantideva again said, where there is hatred, it's like a bullet in the body, creating unbearable pain, preventing peace, even keeping one from sleeping. When a person becomes angry, his relatives and friends suffer and avoid his company. In him who lacks patience, the obstacles of delusion prevent him from achieving Buddhahood. And that there's no heavier negative karma than that caused by hatred. So again, it says, practicing patience. So we allow ourselves not to become disturbed, not retaliating, not holding resentment. We develop our compassion, feeling this other person is not free. So I must practice patience towards them. And that to become a Buddha, I've got to have endure many hardships. I've got to accept that with a joyous mind, accept suffering, accept with patience. I think we'll have some questions now. Anyone got some questions ready? No questions coming. Yes.
Being patient, usually you forget that we are doing a right action in the right time in the right place. But to achieve some goal. But most of us is still young. We don't expect to be patient. Unfortunately, if we fail to act patient, when the next situation comes, we are more aggressive. So how to change to change our mindset that be patient? There is a big reward or big prize in the end.
Yeah.
So how we change our mind?
So that's the thing of being patient with yourself, being patient, so that it is practice. Because I think what you're indicating is that we set ourselves a high bar, a high standard, because we hear the stories of, you know, the Buddha and of, you know, great other practitioners, and think, you know, we set ourselves that level, but we're not at that level. As you rightfully said, we're at a beginner level. So we try something out, we practice it. Maybe if you see a child, you know, when they're learning to walk, little baby, how long do they learn to walk? Takes a year, doesn't it? Pretty much, almost a year, around about a year. So they, first of all, they start crawling, and then as soon as they try and get balance, they fall over. But they don't give up. They don't go, oh well, that's it, can't do it. They keep going, and eventually they learn balance, and eventually they learn coordination, and eventually they learn to be able to stand up, and eventually they learn to be able to walk this earth. It's like we're going to fall down. But we can know, because, you know, if you think about it from a point of view of karma, what's the most important part of thinking about karma is what's our motivation. So even if I don't succeed, my motivation is to practice patience. You remind me of one of the prisoners, one of the guys who... He said, there I was, my meditation, sitting there very nicely, everything was peaceful, calm. And then he said, 5 minutes later, my cellmate really, you know, got in my face. And then he saw anger come. But at least he had that 5 minutes. So this is the thing, we can cultivate this towards ourselves in our own meditation practice, being patient with yourself in your own practice, and build up that confidence. It gives you confidence in the end. And just think, why should I expect myself to be a great meditator when I've only meditated for X amount of time or whatever, or only 20 minutes a day or so forth? So we can only expect to achieve a certain amount, even we practice every day for 20 years for 20 minutes a day or 40 minutes a day or whatever. You can only get to a certain level. So you be patient with yourself in your practice, and every time that you have a success, when you go, okay, in that situation I didn't retaliate, you take great delight in that, you rejoice in that, and you pat yourself on the back, fantastic job, well done. Because we don't do that enough. We have to encourage ourselves, enthuse ourselves with joy. You know, they say joyous effort is the next, you know, perfection to come along. Joyous effort is, we have to really inspire ourselves in our practice. It's not an ego tripping to do that. It strengthens us to do that. So little by little, you get more confidence, because anything that you practice. So what have you learnt? Have you learnt a musical instrument? Have you learnt a sport or anything?
Sport.
Yeah. What sport?
Some martial art.
Martial arts.
Yeah.
How many hours you put in?
4 hours per week, maybe.
Okay. For how many years?
Just started 3 months.
Just started 3 months. Okay. So you're a beginner martial artist. So you know you have to put in a lot of time and effort. But you enjoy doing that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So same thing with patience. You put in 4 hours. 4 hours a week. Now, how many, hang on, if I do 4 hours. But, you know, so I think we hear about this and we think, yep, I've got to practice patience every single minute of the day. And ideally, wow, yes. But as you said, it doesn't happen like that. You know, you practice patience and then a different situation comes. Okay, I can handle that situation, but this different one came. Didn't see that one coming and I reacted. Okay, that becomes, okay, now next time I'll try it in that situation. So you just see it all as learning, just like with the martial arts. It's all a learning process. And eventually we get better and better and better at it. And eventually it becomes just natural to us. But it's not natural to... some people are more patient than others, aren't they? Some people are more ready to anger. Why? You've either practiced more patience previously or you've practiced more anger previously. And all of us have practiced that. Just look at the world. Easy. Irritations come so easy, don't they? So easy. And the only way they can come so easy, we got very good at it. In previous lives, we've got very good at it. And then it just, we don't have to think about, I wonder how I get irritated. Now let me think, this is what I have to do. No, it just comes. With patience, we have to think a bit more about it. So you know, just practice, keep it up. Because also too, I think one of the other things that you're highlighting is that we try a little bit and we think, okay, I did that. And then say it's somebody who's, you know, you're in discussion with, or maybe they're having an argument with you, but then they come back a second time and then a third time. It's just like, oh, I already practiced my patience, done for the day. He says, well, we just have to keep, you know, just keep doing what you can. Don't beat yourself up for what you're not doing. Really take delight in what you are doing. What else?
What is your advice for a person who's become a victim of bullying? Because bullying is some kind of harassment that happens.
Yes.
Every time. So it's a long-run thing. But if you keep being patient without doing anything, you'll only suffer.
Yeah. Yeah, bullying. So that... I talked about that situation of teaching the kids about dealing with anger arising. And that was actually part of an anti-bullying program for schools to raise awareness about that. So it's not about just accepting a situation that needs to be addressed. So the situation has to be addressed. So we find the way, if it's a bullying situation, what actual action can I take? You know, can I report this person? Can I, counselling, you know, talk to the... I don't know the situation, but I'm just saying to see... So it's not about becoming a doormat. You know, we hear patients and we think, oh, we've just got to sit here quietly and take everything. No, it's not about that. It does take great courage. It does take a lot of effort. So you don't do that. Yes, you can have compassion for the person who's doing the bullying, because they must be very disturbed to be that sort of person. But if you're in the immediate line of fire, it's like I said with the knife, you don't just stand there and say, you know, stab me, do you? First of all, you try and get out of the way. So you do what you can to protect yourself in the situation or remove yourself from the situation. So we need to do that. And then take whatever action that we can. And, you know, the rest gets to be, you know, I don't know, if it's an employer situation, employment situation, there's lots of information about bullying and so forth, but we can think this person who's the bully is a very disturbed person, very unhappy person. So while we can have compassion for it, we also have to have compassion towards ourselves and deal with, you know, from both sides in the situation. Yeah, it's a tricky one. But the thing that with bullying, because there's... I know in employment situations there's a whole like website and everything that can be done and so forth, reporting and so forth. Probably similar to the university too. There'd be policies in place and so forth. So, yeah, there are situations where you can do something about that. If it's a family member, There's finding ways. So one of the things that, you know, if we understand karma in, and have compassion also for others, is to, as much as we can, try and also prevent them creating the negative karma themselves, if we can. If that means removing ourselves from that situation so that we're not the target of their bullying, then that's an option. So we have to be wise as well. So it's having wisdom as well to you, whatever situation or whoever you're talking about, knows best the sort of situation. What can we skillfully do? What needs outside help? And then in our own practice, we can go away and maybe in meditation and so forth, have compassion for the person and have some sense of understanding. Why? Because then it doesn't, first off, it doesn't disturb our mind as much. First off, you know, we feel like, oh, there's something I can do in this situation. So I hope that's helpful. Yeah? What else? Any other questions coming up? No? No? Okay. Yes, sorry, I didn't see your hand.
If there's, what if it's not the, like, your mental perspective of it that needs to change, but that the situation needs to change? If, say, you say that person's coming to you again more than... Because you were saying that person comes and you need to be patient with them, and then they come the second and the third time.
Yeah.
And you have to deal with the same situation again. What if it's not that, what if it's because you haven't dealt with it properly? And you haven't taken appropriate action? Am I being vague?
You're being vague. Yeah, I need something a bit more specific than that, if you can. A little bit more specific than that, yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's along the lines of you saying being patient is not being a doormat.
Yes.
So, what I'm trying to say is when you're not showing your anger,
yes,
they might take it as a cue to step forward and see your inability to get angry as a inability to protect yourself from them taking advantage of you.
Yeah. Again, I don't know what the situation is, but yeah. So it's that thing of thinking that patience is a weakness, whereas anger is the weakness. So it's a matter of us, regardless of what the other person thinks, that we don't get angry in that situation because we have the conviction of our own patience. If we see it like a protection, like an armour, where even the other person can get angry at us, we don't have to then retaliate. Once, twice, you know, next time. Okay? So that we don't have to, because what does retaliation only ever do is escalate a situation, doesn't it? Only ever escalates it. It doesn't diffuse a situation. So it doesn't, it harms the other person, plus it harms you in that situation. So in that sense, you know that, like, it's like I'm going to stand my ground, you know, no matter what you say, I'm going to stand my ground. Of course, you know, if it's not just words, if it's violent, you get out of the way. You remove yourself from the situation, but you still don't get angry. Even you can be very firm. Stop. I'm not taking this, or whatever. That doesn't mean it's coming from anger. It can come from anger. But you can be strong You can be strong in your speech and your actions with not an element of anger. Even somebody else might look at that and think, that's anger. This is where, you know, you see the Buddhas who are, you know, the wrathful forms of Buddhas with, you know, this is peaceful, wrathful forms where they're, you know, sort of big teeth and gaping mouths and this and that. So it is said that for those whose minds can't be subdued by peaceful means, we need stronger measures. So the wrathful forms of Buddhas, this, you know, wrathful compassion or wisdom or so forth. And I think, always think about it like a mother who will yell at a kid to, you know, don't put your hand on the hot stove. She's not doing that out of anger. She's doing it out of protection. But she will do it loudly and forcefully and might even get up and yank the kid out of the way. If you didn't know what situation was going on, you might think it looked like anger, mightn't you? But it's not anger. It's love. So it doesn't mean you can't be strong. You can be very strong, very firm. But the thing is, not allowing that to be coloured by anger, not allowing the anger to come in your mind at the same time. So then the other person can't take it as a weakness, because you're being very powerful, you're being very strong. You see the difference?
I've got a second question as well. So,
good.
A bit different.
Good.
If you're the one being patient, does the other person learn to be patient too?
I wouldn't hold my breath. Yeah. It can happen that the other person can learn to be more patient as well. Not by you telling them to be more patient, but part of this teaching about patience is to say, to encourage others in their patience. You know, so whatever means we can to encourage others to, you know, to be less reactive, to be less quick to criticise, to be less quick to do harm, and to take consideration for others. So if we can, we do that. If we can find the way, means to do that. In fact, we must, to prevent them from creating harm through their negative speech, their negative action. So it can be that because patience brings a very calm, tranquil energy, and that has an impact. So it can be that, you know, if whoever you're with or others that you're with are, you know, sort of pick up on that energy and they become calm as a result. But in the end, they've got to work on it in their own mind. Otherwise, all you'd need to do was practice it all yourself, and you walk into a room and everybody else is, you know, immediately patient and calm and peaceful. But it doesn't work that way. But it can have an influence, doesn't it? I mean, you know for yourself, have you been around people who make you feel calm, peaceful? Has it happened in your life? Yes?
Rarely,
but yeah. But yeah, it has happened. Yeah. It's a more subtle energy than anger, which is sort of like really out there, isn't it? Quite a strong vibration. But it has that effect, a calming effect. If you think of where Lord Buddha did the 25 years rains retreats at Saranath in India, you go there and your mind's immediately calm, peaceful, because of the power of that practice, even 2,500 years later. Incredible. It has an effect on the environment. So don't underestimate your own power in that. That it does have an effect on those around you. Other people can also project onto that. You know, my mother some years ago did our family histories for all of us kids, six of us. And on mine, she said that I was a patient baby. And I was like, really? What happened later? So what others see and your experience might be something quite different. But yeah, so by generating positive energy, this is why we do prayers and mantras and so forth, that it generates a positive energy in your own body, which is beneficial towards yourself, but also in the environment around you. Even they say, you know, you recite this, you know, the mantra of compassion, Om Mani Padme Hum, you recite that, 10 malas, takes 10 minutes, you know. And then go into the water, and it gives it, the beings in the water are blessed by that. So in other words, the way I interpret being blessed by that is that they pick up the good vibrations. So we do have an impact, most definitely. Yeah. Anything else? Any other questions? Oh.
Follow-up question about the bullying. When I'm thinking, when I get bullied, maybe the right action I will take is to make a video of that bully and then send it into the principal office. If it's still not working, maybe I will send it into the police office and then show his family. Is it still a good patient because of that? Let's say I get bullied.
The patience is an attitude of mind. So, if you know that this is an action that's going to be skillful, this is where the wisdom side comes in. If it's going to be skillful to video that action and then take the steps necessary, then there's nothing wrong with doing that. But that in itself is not the practice of patience. On the other hand, you've got to not condone that behaviour.
Yeah, because I think, yeah, he will get his own karma because he's doing bullying.
That's true, yeah. So that's why you take whatever actions you can. If that's the most skillful way, it may be simply to say, I'm going to report you, you know. Or whatever. I don't know the situation and if this is a real situation or a hypothetical situation we're dealing with here. So you take whatever means, but you might even be patient with, you know, the outcome. It's sort of like I take whatever action I can and then I know that I've done what I can in this situation. Yeah, I think it's really important that we don't think it's I just take everything that somebody throws at me, because it's not that at all. It's almost the opposite. It's like, okay, if it takes me years to resolve this situation, I will not give up. That's the patient side of that. Even I will pursue it till its end. That's the patience, you know, however long it takes. But without letting my mind get disturbed by that, however long it takes, yep, I'll just do the next thing. If that doesn't work, I'll take it there. If that doesn't work, I'll take it there. If that's the appropriate action to take, and that's where you've got to find out what's the appropriate action that you can take and so forth, and not give up. It takes courage. And patience is courage.
Yes.
Yes, I'm keen for your opinion. Like, would you refer a patient as suffering as well? Like, for example, me, trying to holding to my fears or something.
Hold
my fears to, yes, listen to your Dhamma. Isn't it kind of like suffering as well? But at the same time, you're being patient.
Yeah. So it's not a form of patient. Actual patience is not a form of suppression. It's a state of mind of equanimity, of calm, and so forth. So if you're, as you said, trying to hold your peace, it's like, I'm trying to... That is not patience, is it? It's the opposite. It's impatience, masquerading as patience. So again, it's holding back is not patient either. Yeah, it's a very different approach. So, yeah. Oh, good questions. Okay. Anything else? No. So I think we should dedicate all our energy here tonight to cultivating patience, a strong, powerful, courageous patience in our minds, with ourselves, with others, thinking, you know, if I can protect others from causing harm, I will do that. If I can't, at least I can do no harm myself, or at least have patience with myself in practicing that. So that why? So that I have a more peaceful, calm mind, a mind of equanimity that sees all beings, whether they help me or harm me, as equal. Not the same, but equal, in that we all want to be happy and none of us want to suffer. So that the more I can practice patience, the more I'm going to create a joyous, happy mind, which will lead me to liberation from all the suffering of samsara. Okay, thank you very much.